24. Gladstone translated directly to Government House and swept into the Tactical Command Center with Lee Hunt and half a dozen other aides in attendance. The room was packed. Morpurgo, Singh, Van Zeit, and a dozen others represented the military, although Gladstone noticed that the young naval hero, Commander Lee, was absent. Most of the cabinet ministers were there, including Alan Emoto of Defense, Garion Persoff of Diplomacy, and Barbara Dan Gittes of Economy. Senators were arriving, even as Gladstone did, some of them looking as though they had just been awakened. The power curve of the oval conference table held Senators Kolchev from Lussis, Richaud from Renaissance Vector, Rehnquist from Nordholm, Sabin Storafem from Sol Draconi Septum, and Peters from Deneb Dry. President Pro Tem Denzel Hayat Amin sat with a befuddled expression, his bald head gleaming in the light from overhead spots, while his young counterpart, all-things Speaker Gibbons, perched on the edge of his seat, hands on his knees, his posture a study in barely contained energy. Counselor Albedo's projection sat directly opposite Gladstone's empty chair. All stood as Gladstone swept down the aisle, took her seat, and gestured everyone to theirs. "Explain," she said. General Morpurgo stood, nodded at a subordinate, and lights dimmed while hollows misted.
"Forgo the visuals," snapped Mena Gladstone. "Tell us."
Hollows faded, and the lights came back up. Morpurgo looked stunned, slightly vacant. He looked down at his light pointer, frowned at it, and dropped it in a pocket.
"Madam Executive, Senators, Ministers, President and Speaker, Honorables."
Morpurgo cleared his throat.
"The ousters have succeeded in a devastating surprise attack. Their combat swarms are closing on half a dozen web worlds."
The commotion in the room drowned him out.
"Web worlds," cried various voices. There were shouts from politicians, ministers, and executive branch functionaries.
"Silence," commanded Gladstone, and there was silence.
"General, you assured us that any hostile forces were a minimum of 5 years from the web. How and why has this changed?" The general made eye contact with the CEO.
"Madam Executive, as far as we can tell, all of the Hawking Drive wakes were decoys. The swarms went off their drives decades ago and drove toward their objectives at sublight speed."
Excited babble drowned him out.
"Go on, General," said Gladstone, and the hubbub died once more. "At sublight velocities, some of the swarms must have been traveling that way for 50 standard years or more. There was no possible way to detect them. It was simply not the fault of—"
"What worlds are in danger, General?" asked Gladstone. Her voice was very low, very level. Morpurgo glanced toward the empty air as if seeking visuals there, returned his gaze to the table, his hands clenched into fists.
"Our intelligence at this time, based on fusion drive sightings followed by a shift to Hawking drives when they were discovered, suggests that the first wave will arrive at Heaven's Gate, God's Grove, Mare Infinitus, Asquith, Ixion, Singtau Siswang Pana, Acteon, Barnard's World, and Tempe within the next 15 to 72 hours.
This time there was no silencing the commotion. Gladstone let the shouts and exclamations continue for several minutes before she raised a hand to bring the group under control. Senator Kolchev was on his feet.
"How the goddamn hell did this happen, General? Your assurances were absolute."
Morpurgo stood his ground. There was no responsive anger in his voice.
"Yes, Senator, and also based on faulty data. We were wrong. Our assumptions were wrong. The CEO will have my resignation within the hour. The other joint chiefs join me in this." "God damn your resignation," shouted Kolchev. "We may all be hanging from Farcaster stanchions before this is over. The question is, what the hell are you doing about this invasion?"
"Gabriel," Gladstone said softly. "Sit down, please." That was my next question. "General, Admiral, I presume that you have already issued orders regarding the defense of these worlds." Admiral Singh stood and took his place next to Morpurgo.
am executive. We've done what we could. Unfortunately, of all the worlds threatened by this first wave, only Asquith has a force contingent in place. The rest can be reached by the fleet. None lack Farcaster capabilities. But the fleet cannot spread itself that thin to protect them all. And unfortunately... Singh paused a moment and then raised his voice to be heard over the rising tumult. And unfortunately, deployment of the strategic reserve to reinforce the Hyperion campaign already had been initiated. Approximately 60% of the 200 fleet units we had committed to this redeployment have either forecast through to Hyperion system or been translated to staging areas away from their forward defensive positions on the web periphery. Mayna Gladstone rubbed her cheek. She realized that she was still wearing her cape, although the privacy collar was lowered, and now she unclasped it and let it fall onto the back of her chair. "What you're saying, Admiral, is that these worlds are undefended, and that there is no way to get our forces turned around and back there in time. Correct?" Singh stood at attention, as ramrod stiff as a man before a firing squad.
"Correct, CEO."
"What can be done?" she asked over the renewed shouting. Morpurgo stepped forward.
"We're using the civilian forecaster matrix to translate as many force, ground infantry, and marines as we can to the threatened worlds, along with light artillery and airspace defenses."
Minister of Defense Imoto cleared his throat.
"But these will make little difference without fleet defenses."
Gladstone glanced toward Morpurgo.
"This is true," said the general. "At best, our forces will provide a rearguard action while an attempted evacuation is carried out."
Senator Richaud was on her feet.
"An attempted evacuation? General, yesterday you told us that an evacuation of 2 or 3 million civilians from Hyperion was impractical. Are you now saying that we can successfully evacuate?"
She paused a second to consult her comlog implant.
7 billion people before the ouster invasion force intervenes."
"No," said Morpurgo. "We can sacrifice troops to save a few. A few selected officials. First families, community and industrial leaders necessary to the continued war effort."
"General," said Gladstone, "yesterday this group authorized immediate transferral of force troops to the reinforcement fleet, translating to Hyperion. Is that a problem in this new redeployment?" General Van Zeit of the Marines stood.
"Yes, M. Executive. Troops were forecast to waiting transports within the hour of this body's decision. Almost 2/3 of the 100,000 designated troops have translated into the Hyperion system by..."
He glanced at his antique chronometer.
0530 hour standard. Approximately 20 minutes ago. It will be at least another 8 to 15 hours before these transports can return to Hyperion system staging areas and be returned to the web."
"And how many force troops are available web-wide?" asked Gladstone. She raised one knuckle to touch her lower lip. Morpurgo took a breath.
"Approximately 30,000, M-Executive.
Senator Kolchev slapped the table with the palm of his hand.
"So we stripped the web of not only our fighting spacecraft, but the majority of force troops."
It was not a question, and Morpurgo did not answer. Senator Feldstein from Barnard's world rose to her feet.
"M-Executive, my world, all of the worlds mentioned, need to be warned. If you are not prepared to make an immediate announcement, I must do so."
Gladstone nodded. "I will announce the invasion immediately after this meeting, Dorothy. We will facilitate your contact with constituents via all media."
"Media be damned," said the short, dark-haired woman. "I'll be casting home as soon as we're done here. Whatever fate befalls Barnard's world, it is mine to share. Gentlemen and ladies, we should all be hanging from stanchions if the news is true."
Feldstein sat down amid murmurs and whispers. Speaker Gibbons rose, waited for silence. His voice was wire-taut.
"General, you spoke of the first wave. Is this cautionary military jargon, or do you have intelligence that there will be later waves? If so, what other web and protectorate worlds might be involved?"
Morpurgo's hands clenched and unclenched. He glanced again toward empty air, turned toward Gladstone.
M. Executive, may I use one graphic?
Gladstone nodded. The hollow was the same military had used during their Olympus briefing. The hegemony gold, protectorate stars green. The ouster swarm vectors, red lines with blue shifting tails. The hegemony fleet deployments orange. And it was immediately obvious that the red vectors had swung far from their old courses, lancing into hegemony space like blood-tipped spears. The orange embers were heavily concentrated in the Hyperion system now, with others strung out along Farcaster routes like beads on a chain. Some of the senators with military experience gasped at what they saw.
"Of the dozen swarms we know to be in existence," said Morpurgo,
his voice still soft,
"all appear to be committed to the invasion of the web. Several have split into multiple attack groups. The second wave, projected to arrive at their targets within 100 to 250 hours of the first wave's assault, are vectored as pictured here."
There was no sound in the room. Gladstone wondered if others were also holding their breaths.
"Second wave assault targets include Hebron, 100 hours from now, Renaissance Vector, 110 hours, Renaissance Minor, 112 hours, Nordholm, 127 hours, Maui Covenant, 130 hours, Thalia, 143 hours, Denebdre and Veer, 150 hours, Sol Draconi Septum, 169 hours, Freeholm, 170 hours, New Earth, 193 hours, Fuji, 204 hours, New Mecca, 205 hours, Pachem, Armagast, and Svoboda, 221 hours, Lossus, 230 hours, and Tau Ceti Center, 250 hours.
The hollow faded. The silence stretched. General Morpurgo said,
"We assume that the first wave swarms will have secondary targets after their initial invasions. But transit times under Hawking Drive will be standard web travel time debts, ranging from 9 weeks to 3 years."
He stepped back and stood at parade rest.
"Good Christ,"
whispered someone a few seats behind Gladstone. The chief executive rubbed her lower lip. In order to save humanity from what she considered an eternity of slavery, or worse, extinction, she had been prepared to open the front door of the house to the wolf, while most of the family hid upstairs, safe behind locked doors. Only now, the day had arrived, and wolves were coming in through every door and window. She almost smiled at the justice of it, at her ultimate foolishness in thinking that she could uncage chaos and then control it.
"First," she said, "there will be no resignations, no self-recriminations until I authorize them. It is quite possible that this government shall fall, that indeed members of this cabinet, myself among them, shall be, as Gabriel so aptly put it, hanging from stanchions. But in the meantime we are the government of the hegemony and must act as such. Second, I will meet with this body and representatives of other Senate committees in 1 hour in order to go over the speech I will give to the web at 0800 standard. Your suggestions will be welcome at that time. Third, I hereby command and authorize the force authorities here assembled and throughout the reaches of the hegemony to do everything in their power to preserve and protect the citizenry and property of the web and protectorate through whatever extraordinary means they must employ. General, Admiral, I want the troops translated back to threatened web worlds within 10 hours. I don't care how this is done, but it will be done. Fourth, after my speech, I will call a full session of the Senate and all thing. At that time I will declare that a state of war exists between the human hegemony and the ouster nations. Gabriel, Dorothy, Tom, Iko, all of you, You'll be very busy in the next few hours. Prepare your speeches for your home worlds, but deliver that vote. I want unanimous Senate support. Speaker Gibbons, I can only ask for your help in guiding the All-Thing debate. It is essential that we have a vote of the gathered All-Thing by 1200 hours today. There can be no surprises. Fifth, we will evacuate the citizens of the worlds threatened by the first wave. Gladstone held up her hand and stifled the objections and explanations from the expert. We will evacuate everyone we can in the time we have. Ministers Persoff, Emoto, Dan Giddes, and Crunnins from the Webb Transit Ministry will create and spearhead the Evacuation Coordination Council and will deliver a detailed report and action timeline to me by 1300 hours today. Force and the Bureau for Web Security will oversee crowd control and protection of Farcaster access. Finally, I wish to see Councillor Albedo, Senator Kolchev, and Speaker Gibbons in my private chambers in 3 minutes. Are there any questions from anyone? Stunned faces stared back. Gladstone rose. Good luck, she said. Work quickly. Do nothing to spread unnecessary panic. And God save the hegemony. She turned and swept from the room. Gladstone sat behind her desk. Kolchev, Gibbons, and Albedo sat across from her. The urgency in the air, felt from half-sensed activities beyond the doors, was made more maddening by Gladstone's long delay before speaking. She never took her eyes off Councillor Albedo. You, she said at last, have betrayed us. The projection's urbane half-smile did not waver.
Never, CEO.
Then you have 1 minute to explain why the Technocorps, and specifically the AI Advisory Council, did not predict this invasion.
It will take only one word to explain this, M-Executive, said Albedo. Hyperion.
Hyperion shit, cried Gladstone, slamming her palm down on the ancient desk in a most un-Gladstone-like explosion of temper. I'm sick and tired of hearing about unfactorable variables and Hyperion the predictive black hole, Albedo. Either the Corps can help us understand probabilities, or they've been lying to us for 5 centuries. Which is it?
The Council predicted the war, CEO, said the gray-haired image. Our confidential advisories to you and the Need to Know group explained the uncertainty of events once Hyperion became involved.
That's crap, snapped Kolchev. Your predictions are supposed to be infallible in general trends. This attack must have been planned decades ago, perhaps centuries.
Albedo shrugged. Yes, Senator. But it is quite possible that only this administration's determination to start a war in the Hyperion system caused the ousters to go through with the plan. We advised against any actions concerning Hyperion.
Speaker Gibbons leaned forward.
You gave us the names of the individuals necessary for the so-called Shrike pilgrimage.
Albedo did not shrug again, but his projected posture was relaxed, self-confident.
You asked us to come up with names of Web individuals whose requests to the Shrike would change the outcome of the war we predicted.
Gladstone steepled her fingers and tapped at her chin. And have you determined yet how these requests would change the outcome of that war, this war?
No, said Albedo.
Counselor, said CEO Mayna Gladstone, please be apprised that as of this moment, depending upon the outcome of the next few days, the government of the hegemony of man is considering declaring that a state of war exists between us and the entity known as the Technocorps. As de facto ambassador from that entity, you are entrusted with relaying this fact.
Albedo smiled. He spread his hands. M-Executive, the shock of this terrible news must have caused you to make a poor joke. Declaring war against the Corps would be like a fish declaring war against water, like a driver attacking his EMV because of disturbing news of an accident elsewhere.
Gladstone did not smile. I once had a grandfather on Potofa, she said slowly, her dialect thickening. who put 6 slugs from a pulse rifle into the family EMV when it did not start one morning. You are dismissed, Counselor.
Albedo blinked and disappeared. The abrupt departure was either a delicate breach of protocol. The projection usually left a room or let others leave before deliquescing. Or it was a sign that the controlling intelligence in the core had been shaken by the exchange. Gladstone nodded at Kolchev and Gibbons.
I won't keep you, gentlemen, she said. But be assured that I expect total support when the declaration of war is submitted in 5 hours.
You'll have it, said Gibbons.
The 2 men departed. Aides came in through doorways and hidden panels, firing questions and queuing comm logs for instructions. Gladstone held up a finger.
Where is Severn? She asked.
At the sight of blank faces, she added,
The poet, artist, I mean, the one doing my portrait.
Several aides looked at one another, as if the chief had come unhinged.
He's still asleep, said Leigh Hunt. He'd taken some sleeping pills, and no one thought to awaken him for the meeting.
I want him here within 20 minutes, said Gladstone. Brief him. Where is Commander Lee?
Nikki Carden, the young woman in charge of military liaison, spoke up.
Lee was reassigned to perimeter patrol last night by Morpurgo and the 4 C-Sector chief. He'll be hopping from one ocean world to another for 20 years our time. Right now he's just translated to 4 C-Com Sen on Brescia, awaiting off-world transport.
Get him back here, said Gladstone. I want him promoted to Rear Admiral, or whatever the hell the necessary staff rank would be, and then assigned here to me, not Government House or Executive Branch. He can be the nuclear bagman if necessary.
Gladstone looked at the blank wall a moment. She thought of the worlds she had walked that night. Barnard's world. The lamplight through leaves. Ancient brick college buildings. God's Grove with its tethered balloons and free-floating zeppelins greeting the dawn. Heaven's Gate with its promenade. All these were first-wave targets. She shook her head.
Lee, I want you and Tara and Brindnath to have the first drafts of both speeches, general address and the declaration of war, to me within 45 minutes. Short, unequivocal. Check the files under Churchill and Strudensky. Realistic but defiant, optimistic but tempered with grim resolve. Nikki, I need real-time monitoring of every move the Joint Chiefs make. I want my own command map displays relayed through my implant. CEO only. Barbara, you're going to get my extension of diplomacy by other means in the Senate. Get in there and call in notes, pull strings, blackmail, cajole, and generally make them realize that it would be safer to go out and fight the ousters right now than to cross me in the next 3 or 4 votes. Questions, anyone?
Gladstone waited 3 seconds and slapped her hands together.
Well, let's move, people.
In the brief interval before the next wave of senators, ministers, and aides, Gladstone swiveled toward the blank wall above her, raised her finger toward the ceiling, and shook her hand. She turned back, just as the next mob of VIPs was shown in.